Thank you all for coming and participating in a symposium and for staying till the end. I'm going to be sharing with you my ideas for continuing outreach, particularly once your fellowships have ended, if you are a fellow, and you no longer have the support of your GK-12 program. And in the second portion of the talk, I will be sharing with you some of my ideas for getting started. It's a little bit more difficult once you're outside of that program and you now have to do some of this work on your own. So I'm going to start with the ideas I have for outreach. And these are all based on my activities, things I'm involved in. And I've divided these into four kind of broad categories. Contact hours, some activities I've been involved in on the web, working through societies, and things I've called a non-traditional learning opportunities. So contact time involves exactly what you do for a regular GK-12 fellowship. I have gone out to schools, worked with teachers and students in the classrooms, and I'm working with them to design lessons and extensions to lessons that the teachers already have, but that they feel they could use some more help with, particularly if they have students that are a little bit ahead of everybody else in the classroom, some students who might, you know, benefit from something that's a little bit more rigorous than, or something additional. So once my fellowship ended, I moved to a new institution, and I contacted local schools close to campus, and I found a high school that was very willing to have someone come out and work with the teachers. I've been partnering with one teacher at Atkins High School, and I work with him in both of his classes. He's got a biology class and an environmental science classroom. All of his students are honor students, and so one of the ways that I'm most helpful to him is by bringing in literature, primary literature, and literature from popular science magazines that his students have to use when they're working on their reports. And this forces them not to rely on the internet for their information. So many of these students, you know, when we give them an assignment, they can Google it and they can figure it out really fast. And what we want them to do is go to the literature and have to read it through, get the references, and we want to encourage them to not just read, but to get information from the graphs and the tables that are in the papers, because we want them to understand that the things we're trying to help them to learn to do really do matter, and other people are doing it. And so this is one of the big pushes in this classroom right now, is to help them learn how to incorporate information from the primary literature into their projects and when they're writing their reports. And in addition to going out to the schools, I've done several lab tours. Wake Forest has been very proactive in getting GK-12 students onto campus. And what we really want to do here is demystify this tertiary institution. A lot of these students don't ever think that they can go beyond high school. In fact, many of the students I work with are already looking for jobs. They are done at grade 12 and that's it for them. And we want them to come and realize that we're regular people just like them, and that this is something that they can try for. So we've partnered with Duke. They have a talent identification program, and there are a number of other programs that bring K-12 schools onto the campus at Wake Forest and show them the labs, show them our instruments. Just looking at a pipette sometimes is cool. Now, one of the other things that I've tried to do is make resources available over the web. And this has the benefit of students and educators being able to access it on their own. So they don't always have the time to accommodate me in their classrooms, but they could still take advantage of the lessons that I have. And I'm involved in two very different kinds of activities. One of them involves very controlled access to the website and the information that we have available. And the other is completely available to anyone with a computer and access to the web. So the first was actually started during my fellowship at the University of Minnesota. And this website's still hosted, it's still very much alive. During this fellowship, one of our colleagues, Sujaya Rao, had the idea that we should try to connect schools in different GK-12 programs across the country. And what we decided to do was set up a site where anyone could log on and share phenology information. And we started with this because it meets some of the state standards for Minnesota elementary schools. So schools do have to register, and the teachers log on for privacy reasons, but once the teacher is on, that person can then select the students or, you know, however many students they want to enter the data. And they can do things like enter high record temperature, record low temperature, high and low, day length, they can enter sunrise or sunset time, the amount of precipitation. And at the teacher's discretion, all of this data can be collected and tabulated in you know, increments of weeks or months or seasons, whatever they feel is appropriate for their classroom at the time. So this is just a week's worth of data that I snatched off. And what they can do with that is draw graphs. Now, as Susan has said in her talk, it's really hard to get science into some of the other lessons like math, but it's pretty easy for us to get math into science. This website has been set up so that it will automatically generate these graphs if the teacher decides. However, all of this information can be downloaded into Excel, and the kids would have to figure out how to use that to draw the graphs. And the benefit we saw of that is that they would learn how to use Excel to do some of this graphing, and they'd learn how to interpret the graphs. The teacher that we worked with in setting this up also has her students write summaries of the graphs. So they have to interpret all this information, and then they have to present it to their fellow students. They also have the ability to post these summaries online so that people from other schools can go on and see what their interpretation of the data was. They can download data from other schools. It's not just their school's data that they can download. So a school in Minnesota can get data from a school in North Carolina. They can plot it on the same graph, and they can compare temperature changes over the same time period. So we're really trying to get them to learn to use the web as an educational tool and not just something for entertainment. Now, one of the other things that I've started to do is work with my current advisor on lesson plans. And all of these are centered around the research that we do. And what we've tried to do in all of these lesson plans to make them uniform is to identify the grade level we're targeting, which standards that we're trying to meet, and if we can develop extensions that we think are useful, those are also included in the lesson. And teachers are free to come and download these from his website and amend them as they see fit for their classes. So they're on, this is Dr. Bill Connor's website. He has, and I wanna walk you through some of the things that the teachers I asked to test drive this found useful. One of the things they really appreciated was that right up front, he tells them what they're gonna learn at the on this website. So they don't have to figure out what it is they're gonna get. They can come make a decision right on the front page. And so far, nobody has said it's not useful. They've always clicked through and gone on. And he outlines the scientific problem. So this is something we talk about with our students all the time. What's the scientific method? What do we wanna learn? Why are we doing these steps? This is outlined on the website. And we've also made available some fairly complex information, but it's always put in context of this scientific problem. And it's written out in fairly easy language, fairly accessible language that most of our students can understand. Okay, now the other kind of activity I'm involved in is working with societies. Societies like ESA that are interested in working with K-12 schools and are, you know, we'll host a symposium, we'll host workshops. I'm also a member of the Lepidoptera Society, and they do make a big effort to host workshops at their annual meetings. So they go around, you know, we have meetings in different states every year, and there's someone who contacts local teachers, tells them we're coming, and they organize workshops. So we've had members of the society who have developed lesson plans, making them available to them. They give talks to show them what we can do. And it's a really great forum to bring educators together. So one of the things I've learned is educators often don't have time to talk to each other when they're in school, but they're brought together in a room and we can have a lot of good idea sharing sessions. And that's worked really well. Now, the non-traditional learning activities, I would encourage you to look at clubs that have education components. 4-H is one of the big ones that the Lepidoptera Society right now is trying to work with. We're trying to partner with them and figure out how the research and the work that we do as Lepidopterists would complement their educational goals. Science museums are also always interested in having people come out and talk. I've worked with a couple of science museums who are always looking for people to come out and talk to the students for summer programs especially. And then there are also just special summer education programs that many schools put on that, you know, we've had people call Wake who were looking for someone to come out and talk about butterflies to sixth graders, or libraries who are looking for someone to remind them how many legs an insect has. So if you're interested in outreach, I definitely encourage you to look at some of these other options if you don't have a school that you can go out and work with, if teachers are just not available, or you don't have the time to put together a website. There are other activities that you can join in too. So just one more time. If you are interested, and I'm encouraging you to go out and get involved in K-12, the contact time with the teachers and the students is invaluable. It's been tremendously rewarding for me and for all the other fellows and all the other people who've done outreach. The web activities do take some time. We put in a lot of effort to developing websites, to making things accessible in a way that, you know, will be meaningful immediately. And working with societies, this has been a really good way for me to meet other people who are interested in K-12 outreach and to get more ideas for things I can take back to the classrooms I work with. And the non-traditionals, the clubs, the science museums, the summer programs have also been really enriching. So, how do we get started? This is something that I had to learn last year. So I moved to a new place, there was no GK12 program, and there was nobody to just point me to a school and say, they can use you right now. So I started out, and I encourage you to start out by examining your goals. So why are you doing this? I think it's gonna fall along the lines of you wanna share your content expertise and you wanna share your enthusiasm with students. And it helps you to keep abreast of the current needs of K-12. I'm interested in outreach, I'm sure many of you are. I want to know what these teachers have to deal with, what their students have to deal with, so I know how I can best help them and how they would fit in with my program. And schools have similar goals. The ones that I have worked with have all wanted to enrich content of their lessons. They want more and more content, and as we work with teachers, they want to know that we're willing to help our teachers in areas that they think, you know, they might be, that they could use some more help with. So I've worked with teachers who might not have been that keen on insects in the classroom, weren't terribly excited about it, but were certainly more than willing to learn whatever else, you know, I could help them with. And everybody, again, wants to excite their students. So I got to Wake, and what I did was to find the professors who were already involved in outreach. And there is actually one professor in chemistry who dedicates most of her time to outreach with the local K-12 schools. And she runs a program called SIMAX. She's the one who is involved in the talent identification program and for recruiting students onto campus. I met with her, told her what I was interested in, and she was immediately able to point me to schools that could use me as a resource. So one of the things we've learned is we can have really great ideas and we have lots of stuff the teachers can do, and we'll go in there and say, okay, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna make it really better. But they might not be able to take advantage of that immediately because they have so many other constraints that we are not aware of. And so having her be able to tell me, this is a school I know will take advantage of you. This person can work with you. That was really helpful for me, and I'm sure helpful to the schools that couldn't use me, because then I wasn't knocking on their doors trying to, you know, enhance lessons when they couldn't take advantage of it. So after figuring out which schools I could contact, I went and found the North Carolina State Standards. I thought it was very helpful to inform myself about what it was my teacher had to do. I wanted to know what he was trying to hit in his science classrooms, what goals he had to do for his biology classes, and then I went to his website. So he made all of his syllabi available on the web, and I was able to see very quickly, he didn't have very much time in the classroom. He teaches evolution in 1 week. That's one meeting session, and these are all honors students. He has 35 kids in his class. That's not a lot of time. So I know right up front what his time constraints were. Having looked at the standards, I knew what it was he was trying to do. So I met with him, and I had, you know, prepared a certain amount of rough outlines for lesson plans before getting to the school, and that really helped us hit the ground running so that he could see what I brought to the table, and we could work together very quickly, and he could tell me, you know what, here is what I need to do, here's where you can best help me, let's get this out of the lesson plan, let's put more of this in. And that's what we did. And so far, it's worked really well. Now, working together is a big, big part of this, and I think this is probably the most important thing. When I first met my teacher, I made very clear to him how I thought he could benefit and how his school would benefit by having me in the classroom. But I was also really upfront about what I was looking for, because all the teachers I've worked with have been very open to helping me achieve my goals as well. And I think everyone wants to know how they're going to be able to help you as well. They appreciate knowing that you're going to come and learn from them. And they have all been very good about helping me learn about their classrooms, what their students need, and helping me understand how to teach 12th graders. And I really appreciate that, because today's 12th graders are tomorrow's undergrads. And understanding how these kids learn and how you can effectively teach them what they need to has been very, very helpful. And another thing I'd remind you, and I remind myself of this all the time, is to be realistic. I have grand ideas where everything's going to get done in half an hour, we'll be out, it's no problem, we'll meet all the standards, but it doesn't always work like that. They do have to meet the standards and the tests, and the school has goals for their classrooms, and each student, each classroom is unique. Each combination, each set of people in their chairs makes everything different, and that's something that we all have to learn to deal with. And you have to be realistic about your own time constraints. You might want to have, you know, a ton of things go on in the classroom, but it's much more helpful if you can be there with the teacher to help them do it, at least the first time. It's not so helpful if you say, okay, here's my great lesson plan, I have to go. So be realistic with what you can do and, you know, what is feasible for you. And then I want to end by encouraging you to continue your outreach. It helps you, it definitely helps the teachers enhance their curricula, help you to keep abreast with K-12, and I think someone mentioned earlier, for those of us who are writing proposals and have to include an education component, we can go out and we can say, we've done this, we know how to do this, we're partnered with teachers, they've helped us to become better mentors, better educators, better communicators, and we can show that we have that. And I'd like to acknowledge all the people who've helped me. The Wake Forest Outreach professors have been tremendous. U of Minnesota GK12 program was instrumental in helping me get to this point. The teachers and schools, Atkins High and their teacher, Philip Bowes, and the Battle Creek Elementary teachers and students who still test drive everything for me even though I'm not there. And the lessons that work for my elementary school teachers work for my high school teachers. They're not that different. We just make it a little bit more complex. And to all the professors who've been very helpful in helping me continue my outreach and help me figure out what it is I need to do at each stage. And with that, I'll thank you for your attention and take any questions you have. Well, there. I don't know how many, so the question is how many of them were able to access it outside of school? I do not know how many were able to access it outside of school. My guess would be not many, because the schools I work with, the population is very socioeconomically low, particularly the high school that I work with. It is even in a tougher environment than the St. Paul inner city schools. I really do not think that many of them are able to access it outside of school. Inside of school, though, I know the teachers do encourage them to go online and, you know, take a look at what's there, especially if we have somebody that's a little bit, you know, if they have 10 minutes or 15 minutes, they're that much more ahead of the other class students. Okay, well, thank you all for coming, and on behalf of Matthew and myself, I'd like to thank you all for participating. This has been a very good symposium. You've all participated really well. We've had great questions, great talks, And we encourage you to keep in touch with each other, or, you know, contact Matthew or I if you have any questions about anything else. You all have our emails. And, you know, keep up the good work with the outreach and the students.